Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. For the past 20 years, The Beat Within has worked tirelessly to give a voice to youth behind bars. The Beat Within serves over 5,000 youth annually through workshops in 13 California County juvenile halls and facilities in Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, Hawaii, Oregon, and Washington, D.C. The Beat Within publishes a biweekly magazine, which includes poems, drawings, and essays by young people telling stories about the abuse, poverty, homelessness, drug abuse, violence, and trauma they've endured. The Beat Within also works with organizations to ensure that young people lead healthy, nonviolent, productive lives once they get out of jail. On today's Your Call, we are talking about why it's important for these young people to share their stories and what will it take to create conditions to prevent, for example, a 12-year-old boy ending up with a life sentence in juvenile hall. The United States is the only country in the world that sentences young people to life in prison with no opportunity for parole. In 2014, there were 2,500 young people serving life sentences. Today, we are joined by three guests. David Innocencio co-founded The Beat Within in 1996 after working in the San Francisco Public Defender's Juvenile Division. Still going strong, almost 21 years later. David, thank you so much for coming in today.
Thank you, Rose, for having me.
Great to have you.
It's great to be here.
We're also joined by Jesus Martinez. He wrote his first piece for The Beat Within when he was locked up as a 14-year-old. Today, Jesus is a case manager in Oakland working with young men in the juvenile justice system in Alameda County. And Jesus also joins us. Hi, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Monica Carlos was introduced to The Beat Within when she was incarcerated at age 15. She later became a facilitator for the organization and then went on to have a family, but she continues to work with at-risk youth to make sure they don't make the same mistakes she once did. And Monica is also in studio. Thank you for coming in, Monica. The Beat Within is having a fundraiser this Friday at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco. Doors at 7. The show starts at 8. And you can find information about this event at yourcallradio.org. David, let's start off with you.
Okay.
You co-founded The Beat Within back in 1996. Mm-hmm. And I understand that at that time you did not think you'd still be running it in 2017.
No kidding. Starting this program was, you know, an act of love, but thinking about where we are today, 20 years later, I pinch myself. I can't believe that the need is as equally important today as it was 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. But yes, here we are still going in each and every week leading these amazing writing workshops and putting out this amazing publication that touches a lot of lives every other week.
It's an amazing publication. You also now post some of these poems online.
Yes.
But tell us a little bit about how The Beat Within got started.
Oh, wow. Sure. So, as you mentioned, I got my start working in the public defender's office and had some amazing mentors within that office, from the incredible lawyers that worked tirelessly to the amazing social worker who took me under her wings when I didn't have a lot of experience. Her name was Marinella Woods. And today's her birthday, by the way. Happy birthday, Marinella.
Happy birthday.
She took a chance on me. I had no experience in this work, but gave me the chance to really learn the ropes, and I embraced it and was so moved by what I was seeing. And I knew this was my calling. And watching how easily it was for the system to bring young people within the, in front of the courtroom, stereotype them by their alleged crimes from their communities, I knew there was more to their story than that. I knew that these young people have hopes, dreams, loves, fears that weren't being shared. And I thought to myself, if I someday could create a venue or a platform for young people to teach one another, that's what I would like to do. Lo and behold, you know, fast forward 4 or 5 years, I connect with Sandy Close at Pacific News Service / New American Media, another amazing individual who took a chance on me as well. And wanted me to support her efforts in the community working with young people. But I told her if I was going to do that, I also wanted to keep my connection with what I am doing in juvenile hall. She let me run with it, gave me the freedom to create, and supported my effort. And lo and behold, we have our first writing workshops in January of 1996. Fast forward 9 months later, the death of Tupac Shakur, the birth of The Beat Within. Mm-hmm. From that point forward, you know, here we are 20 years later celebrating our program, our amazing work.
And here you are serving over 5,000 youth annually. You're in 13 juvenile halls in California, and then you are also in Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, Hawaii, Oregon, and Washington, D.C.
Can I add New Orleans?
New Orleans. I mean, this is incredible.
And we even start a program in Rikers Island, which is amazing, in New York.
And
Yeah, I'll stop. But yes, we are.
Well,
Montana.
Really?
Yeah.
Talk a little bit, about the need for this, because you are creating a place and a space for young people behind bars to express themselves through poetry, through stories, and art.
Yeah. There's definitely a need for it. And the beauty is that the folks who have the desire to start these programs are activists, are writers, get the power of storytelling and want to be a part of this amazing community and realize how important the publication is. It really is an anchor, a lifeline for so many young people. And to bring these stories under this umbrella so these young people can teach one another through their fears, hopes, challenges that they're experiencing can only... couple things help. One, that they're not alone and realize there's someone else out there that has it harder than them or is equally challenging, and then also that they're being listened to and heard.
David Innocencio co-founded The Beat Within back in 1996, and it's still going strong today. Monica, you were introduced to The Beat Within when you were incarcerated at age 15, and you later became a facilitator for The Beat Within. When did you first learn about The Beat Within? How did you learn about it?
Well, I first learned about The Beat Within being in juvenile hall. I would have never heard about The Beat Within. And it was just, I used to read and write on my own, but never nothing like The Beat Within. And, it was something to look forward to every week when they would come to juvenile hall. We would do our workshops, and it was just really a great opportunity to have a voice. And I would, we're not to, supposed to talk about our crimes, when we do this, incriminating yourself. But to me, that's the only thing that I could actually talk about, write about. And it helped me through those times.
Where were you in juvenile hall?
I was in San Francisco juvenile hall.
And what resources are available for young women? What resources were available for you?
As what I can remember, I had the women's center at that time. They would come visit me a lot, and those were the only resources that I had.
And then The Beat Within.
And The Beat Within.
How did that? I mean, what did that do for you? Just the ability to write poetry or stories and then have it published. What did that do for you?
It gave me confidence and just knowing that other people were out there going through the same thing. And like Dave said, they were going through, the worser things than you. And you're like, I'm not alone. And not only that, getting out of jail, I was able to go work, just show up there, and I was able to get a job. They didn't ask me no questions. They knew already, my background. I didn't have to go through that. And where could you honestly say you could do that now? I don't know where you could do that now. Before, we could give interns, people that got out of juvenile hall jobs and stuff, but now we can't do that. So we need more programs like this and to make it bigger so we could help the kids that get out and they won't, end up in trouble.
Jesus, you wrote your first piece for The Beat Within when you were locked up as a 14-year-old.
Yes.
When did you learn about The Beat Within? When did you hear about it?
When I was 14 at 375 Woodside Avenue, San Francisco, California, 94127. I was in there. I believe it would come on Wednesday evenings, right after dinner. And honestly, at that time, I'm not a strong reader. I don't read too much today unless it's autobiographies or poems or something that's genuine and not fiction or science fiction. I don't like the idea of other people's creativity, which is good and all. I like to see, concrete things actually happen. But I was 14. They would come on Wednesdays. And I would look for every opportunity to get out of my cell, because if you didn't come out, then you just stay in there, And I was there for a couple of months. And it was my first time. I was 14. So every time they came, I didn't know I liked to write back then. But as soon as they said, you want to write, you want to draw. I also draw. I would draw. But writing, I started writing. I also shared my experience of what court was like and just different things to vent. Some people wanted to rap, but whatever it was a form of ventilation for young men, you know, whether you agree with what they wrote or they didn't. And yeah, the thing that surprised me is when I got released, some of my friends from Mission High School, they were, hey, I read your piece, you know, I threw my little nickname, my little moniker, and they would know that was me. So it just surprised me, and it felt good knowing that although I was alone during my time, I didn't, you know, get too many visits and everything, that there were people out there like seeing these things or feeling what I was feeling or, you know, caring. So I thought that was cool.
Can you talk about the difficulties for young people like yourselves to share their experiences about how you get caught up in the system?
Well, I feel like when it comes to writing, people either A, they want to write about their experiences of what it's like or well it up to whatever incident happened and how sorry they are or how they felt or, you know, what happened behind the scenes. Like, for example, I wrote about how when I was locked up and then they sentenced me to a program. I didn't know these words, but they meant a group home. And I immediately broke down, you know, because I was trying to hug my sister in court and they didn't let me hug my sister. So I wowed out. I made a scene because, to be honest, although I didn't go about it the correct way at the age of 14 and being able to control my anger, the idea of them not letting me hug my sister when I know I'm not going to see her for months, which she kind of raised me like a mom, it hurt. So I wrote about that, you know, because people just want to see, once you're a criminal, that's it. There's no need to hear anything else besides the fact that did you serve your time or not. No, there's so much more, so much pain, so much anger, so much just heartbreak going on in there. And also sometimes people, they want to choose to write something not associated anything to do with their crime or their case, because there's so much more than just that one incident that you did that got you put in the system. There's, you know, life outside of the bars. There's the sports that you play, the music you listen to, the family that you may or may not have. So, yeah.
Monica, what would you add? The difficulties of young men and women talking about their experiences and sharing their experiences.
Well, it's hard being a grown-up and sharing your business. So just imagine some kids can't even express themselves. They can't even talk about anything. Maybe they don't talk about it because they feel like no one cares. And sometimes they could write about it and they don't have to even put their name on it. They could, you know, make a fake name or, you know, they could put their heart and their soul. And, you know, it's just really difficult.
David, what changes have you seen when you work with young people before and after the writing experience?
So before, I think young people who are not familiar with the Beat Within see it as a school assignment or a class. So a lot of the young people we work with have this fear of writing or don't have a history of being consistent with school. And then when they go through the process and they see us every single week, we really pride ourselves on being consistent in young people's lives when there's not a lot of consistency. Mm-hmm. We pride ourselves on relationships and trust and showing up each and every week and giving a young person a pencil and a paper and a topic ideas and encouraging them. And not that we're going to pull out the red marker and mark up their page and give them a D plus or D minus or F or whatever, but to push them to tell their stories and how they should see themselves as teachers, and that through their writing, so many people can learn from what you have to offer, from the court people to your peers to your enemies to the community. And I think the key is, of course, you come back in a couple of weeks with the magazine with the young person's writing published. I mean, it's an incredible highlight how many folks get published. So to be published and to know that your voice is being read, your writing is being read by someone in New Orleans or being read by someone in Los Angeles or let alone across the bay in Alameda County, it's a highlight.
And are these magazines, you just brought in the latest one, they're distributed all over the country?
To all the institutions that we go into. Wow. Yeah, so we have various arrangements with each site that we go into and the organizations that we collaborate with.
Hey, Susan, Monica, what are your thoughts when you hear David say that we are consistent and a lot of young people in jail don't have that consistency? They say they try to build trust and they show up every week. Hey, Sus, can you talk about that?
They've never missed a week or a day in juvenile hall all the times that I've been locked up. So, yeah, that's 100% true. I never seen it. I look forward, like, I even remember this 12 years ago, and it was every Wednesday night. Like, that's how clear that looks. I also want to follow up with something Monica said. A lot of people, they don't want to share who they are. They'll share what they feel and what they go through to help others, but they don't want to put themselves in a vulnerable position. You'll see a lot of monikers and nicknames. Mm-hmm. Even as an adult, sometimes I won't even write my real name because I feel like I pour out so much. Mm. So, yeah, I definitely agree with her on that. And consistency is great.
And how did it make you feel knowing that they were going to show up every Wednesday and they were there to talk to you and to ask you how you were feeling, what you were going through?
I was ready to look forward to get out of my cell. Like, that was really it at the beginning. I was just like, I need to get out of my cell. I'm tired of being here. Like, mm-hmm. this is small, small room, no windows, all metal. There's like boogers on the wall. There's graffiti. I think they built a new one since I've been in there. But knowing that you hear those keys or opening, knowing that the be within's here, it's like they kind of take you away from that whole institutionalized lifestyle for that one, you know, hour and a half that they share with you. And you could write about what you want. And also on top of that, I want to throw in, just to, you know, put visuals for every all of the listeners, the pencils, your average number two pencil, they would chop it down to like one third of the size because they feel like maybe a youth might stab somebody, which I've never seen out of all my times in there. But it's really like dehumanizing for them to be like, let me just give you this one third of a size number two pencil for you guys to write, you know?
Monica? What about the importance of the consistency of the program?
I would have to say that it's so important in... Like, even as a facilitator, if I can't make it, like, I know one of my coworkers is going to make it. But, like, recently I could say, like, going to Yolo County, there's been times, you know, I'm going through personal stuff. I haven't been able to make, like, I didn't get to make one workshop. And then I come the following week and they're like, where were you last week? You know, and that really, it bothers me, you know. I could be like, they're like, how come you didn't make it? And I'm like, oh, you know, like, I'm just going through a really hard time right now. But, you know, I let them know, like, what's really going on. I share a part of my personal life with them because I'm, you know, they're going through a really tough time too in there. So I want them to understand me, to feel me, where, you know, where I'm coming from, to know that I do want to be here, but sometimes, you know, there's just things that happen.
That is Monica Carlos. She was introduced to the Beat Within when she was incarcerated at age 15. She later became a facilitator for the organization. She went on to have a family, but she still works with at-risk youth to make sure they don't make the same mistakes she once did. We're also joined by Jesus Martinez. He wrote his first piece for the Beat Within when he was locked up as a 14-year-old. And today, Jesus is a case manager in Oakland. He works with young men in the juvenile justice system in Alameda County. And David Inocencio co-founded The Beat Within in 1996. For the past 20 years, The Beat Within has worked tirelessly to give a voice to youth behind bars. They work with 5,000 youth annually through workshops in 13 California County juvenile halls and facilities in Arizona, Texas, New Mexico, Hawaii, Oregon, Washington, D.C., New Orleans, Rikers Island in New York, and Montana. And if you're free on Friday, The Beat Within is having a fundraiser at the Great American Music Hall. There will be live music. The show starts at 8, and you can find information online. And if you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. The toll-free number is 866-798-8255. If you have any questions for our guest today about life behind bars as young people, this is something we don't spend that much time talking about in this society, even though the United States is the only country in the world that sentences young people to life in prison with no opportunity for parole. In 2014, there were 2,500 young people serving life sentences. And if you work with youth who are spending time behind bars, we'd love to hear from you. Or if you work with at-risk youth and you'd like to talk about the realities that they're facing and the kind of work you do, we'd love to hear from you. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org. Jesus, you were talking about what life is like behind bars and how some of the things that happened are meant to dehumanize young people. Can you tell us more? For people who just don't know, I mean, what does the facility look like? What is it an average day like?
Well, when I was there, the ground was checkered. It was like red and brown. The same tables we used for dinner were the same tables we used for rec time. They would literally put you in your cell, wake you up like at around 6:30. That's breakfast time. And if you didn't want to wake up early, which a lot of people don't like waking up early, You didn't get to come out for the whole day. You stay in your cell, no school, no. If you were to eat lunch, you'd eat inside your cell. Or you would shower after everybody, no phone calls. I think phone calls are once a week on Tuesday evenings. And you can only call, the numbers listed on your emergency contact information. You can't call brothers, sisters, aunties, grandmas, just mom or dad, if you have a dad. It would suck if you didn't get visits. You would hear people like, Martinez, you got a visit. Jones, you got a visit, but you hear the doors unlocked. And if you didn't, they didn't come around to your doors, you knew your parent didn't make it that day. And too many of our youth didn't have visitors for whatever reason. I don't know their background or what they went through. Maybe parents were busy working or they were disappointed. It could be a variety of things. So that all is dehumanizing. I just feel like it really messes you up. No window, you can't get some air. I remember having like anxiety attack at night from nightmares, like trauma. And I'd want to get out my cell just to go to the bathroom. They didn't let me get out my cell to use the bathroom, you know. So it was just whatever, depending on who was working, depending on how your day was going to go. And did you kind of had an idea.
Did you have a cellmate?
Not me.
So you were in there alone.
Yeah. A lot of youth, they prefer to be alone because sometimes it's kind of hard to deal with other people's.
When you were first arrested, were you told what to expect? This is what's going to happen to you?
I'll be straight. When I grew up, I hung around the Mission. You know, they got the whole this neighborhood, that neighborhood stuff. So without saying any names, somebody who was a staff member put me as they labeled me as something that I wasn't, the opposite of what I was, intentionally to put me in the same crowd or population with people that I was going to get into it with, which did happen. Mm-hmm. You know, I just remember they were smiling and they're like, oh, you think you're a tough guy, huh? I'm just like, I don't think I'm anything. And then they just wrote that I'm this when I wasn't. And next thing you know, the guards, after we got into a scuffle inside, which is ugly as it is, the guard told me, like, it says right here that you're associated with this. I was like, I'm not that, sir. He's like, well, somebody wrote this here. I was like, oh, I'm sorry. You know, but I'm just one individual of so many that have been in there. People have had different experiences. So, whatever. Like I said, whoever's working is going to determine how your day goes. Sometimes I had great days. I had guys who put me on my cell and talked to me, and why do I do what I do, and where's my father, and what am I going to do when I get out, what are my goals, you know. And then sometimes some guys, let's say one person was speaking in the hallway, the whole hallway couldn't come out the whole day because they just weren't willing to deal with any of the youth.
David, how common is this experience?
Very common. I mean, not that our audience has the magazine in front of them, but you're going to see the Jesus stories within the pages of this magazine, the struggle of surviving daily life in juvenile hall, to the struggles of living, securing your freedom while you're free and not falling to the traps of the system, let alone a lifestyle that's going to bring you in and out of jail, or let alone 6 feet under. So, I mean, there's a lot of challenges our young people who find themselves within the criminal justice system are dealing with on a daily basis. If it's juvenile hall, the community are dealing with their loved ones.
The front cover of this issue of The Beat Within has a piece of art of bars with two hands coming out. One hand, there's a sign under the hand that says stop, and then the other one is holding books, Think and Grow, Think Outside. And there's a poem from Devante, and it says, this is not a place of happiness. This is a place of hate and sadness. These walls do close in on you, and every day someone tells you when to get up, when to take a shower, and when to go to bed. Please do not come to a place like this. Keep your freedom. What goes through your minds when you hear that poem, Monica?
I just want to say something, because we're sitting here, we're talking about jail, and, you know, a lot of people are like, well, jail is not supposed to be pretty, you know, because we committed crimes to go in jail. But what people forget is that these are kids. And kids, a lot of these kids are there because they're in foster care. They're there because it's their parents' fault. They don't want them no more. You know what I'm saying? So we have to take that into consideration. And the programs that they have in there, there's not enough. They're not treating these kids like kids. They're treating them as adults. And they're making them pay for it as adults.
Well, let's continue talking about that after the break. The other question is, what as a society do we need to do to ensure that more youth, don't end up behind bars? We often hear about the school-to-prison pipeline or the the cradle to prison pipeline. What should we as a society do to ensure that these numbers just don't continue? Today we are speaking about The Beat Within. This is an incredible organization that gives a voice to youth behind bars. They serve 5,000 youth annually across the country. David Innocencio co-founded The Beat Within back in 1996. Jesus Martinez wrote his first piece for The Beat Within when he was behind bars as a 14-year-old. And Monica Carlos was introduced to The Beat Within when she was incarcerated at age 15. And they're having a fundraiser this Friday at the Great American Music Hall. Doors at 7, the show is at 8. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
This is Your Call on KALW, a show that relies on engaged listeners. You can join today's conversation by calling 866-798-TALK. That's toll-free, 866-798-8255. And you can post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org or tweet us at yourcallradio. Thanks to all the listeners who supported KLW's May campaign. When the pitching ended on Saturday at noon, we were at $55,000 short of our $400,000 goal. Now, thanks to support that continues to come in, we are just $38,000 away from making that goal. Reaching the goal is important for KLW to continue to grow and stay on track financially. If you'd like to help us close the gap, please give us your support today at klw.org. And thanks.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today we are talking about The Beat Within, an organization that works to give a voice to young people behind bars. They serve 5,000 youth annually through workshops in 13 California County juvenile halls and facilities across the country. They publish a biweekly magazine. It includes poems, drawings, and essays by young people telling stories about the abuse, the poverty, homelessness, violence, trauma, and drug abuse that they've endured. And then they also work with organizations to ensure that young people lead healthy, productive lives once they get out of jail. And The Beat Within is having a fundraiser this Friday at the Great American Music Hall. Doors at 7, the show's at 8. And you can find information online. Today we're joined by David Innocencio. He co-founded The Beat Within back in 1996. Jesus Martinez wrote his first piece for The Beat Within when he was locked up at 14. Today he works with young men in the juvenile justice system in Alameda County. And Monica Carlos was introduced to The Beat Within when she was incarcerated at age 15. And today she works with at-risk youth. And if you'd like to join us, if you'd like to talk about, you know, what we as a society can do, jobs, programs. I mean, there are so many solutions out there to ensure that young people do not go to jail. If you work with young people, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org. Monica, before the break, you were talking about the importance of explaining why young people end up in jail in the first place. Can you elaborate on that?
Well, can I share a little bit about my experience?
Please, yes.
Well, what led up to me being incarcerated was I was jumped really bad downtown one time. And after I was left unconscious in front of Mel's Diner by multiple people, like grown people, young people. They just left me there, and no one came to help me. Like, everyone came to try to help me until everybody was gone. They're like, are you okay? You know, after I was jumped, I didn't feel safe anymore. I started carrying weapons with me. I started carrying screwdrivers. I started carrying scissors. I started carrying anything that I could find, because I was afraid that I was going to get jumped again or something was going to happen to me.
Did you know the people who did this?
No, I don't know the people. I didn't know them at all. It was some girls downtown, and they said that I bumped into them. And I was like, I said, no, I didn't. I'm sorry anyways. And they went on to ask me the size of my shoes. And it just went on from there. At that time, I didn't have a cell phone. there just really wasn't nothing that I could do. But like I said, after that, I would carry anything with me. And eventually, I started carrying a knife with me. And that's what led up to my incarceration. I got into an incident with somebody, and I used my knife on them. And that was my first time ever going to juvenile hall. And I was there for attempted murder. I was fighting a 707. They were trying to trial me as an adult. And it was like a movie. It was just so unreal, like, that I was actually going through that. But that's what led up to me being incarcerated.
And how long were you behind bars?
I did 3 years. I went to the California Youth Authority, which is in Camarillo. So, you know, I'm from out here, and I had to go all the way out there. We didn't, you know, my mom couldn't come see me all the time.
Jesus described earlier what life was like when he went to jail. What was it like for you?
They call the California Youth Authority like the baby pen. It's people could be up in there until they're 25 years old, and you have to go up to the parole board to get paroled to leave.
And what about just daily life? I mean, when you first got there, what was it like? How were you treated?
Well, when I first got there, I mean, I'm not going to lie, I was scared. I didn't know what I was going to expect, anything at all. It's very, you know, structured. It's just being locked up. They have school there. You go to school. You have to get up. You have to eat breakfast. You don't eat breakfast. You just don't eat. You have to just follow all their rules.
Were there many programs available for young women?
School. It's mandatory. They have school, and if they cancel school, they'll let everybody cancel certain classes. They'll let everybody know.
And how were you able to get that charge dropped?
Well, I beat my 707. Mm. Luckily, I beat it, and they didn't try on me as an adult.
We have a few callers on the line. Let's hear from Orlando in Oakland. Hi, Orlando. Welcome to the show.
Oh, great. I love your callers. I mean, your people that been in that situation. I applaud them, first of all. Could you hear me now?
Yes, you're fine. Yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. So, make a long story short,
Orlando, your line is bad. Can you repeat what you just said?
I say this, alternative solutions to the situations that me and those individuals that's been in. I'm from East Oakland, California. When I was like 9 years old, I went to a group home. When I was 12 years old, I went to the California Youth Authority for 11 years, 2 months, in and out, city jail, county jail. Wound up going to the penitentiary, did 4 years after that, did two, came home and took that positive experience, knew I could make an impact in my community and help others. So I ran for mayor of Oakland twice. Now I'm one of the founders of the Oakland Green Party.
Oh, wow.
Now I'm one
All
of
right.
the secretaries of
Resiliency.
Of Oakland.
Congrats to you.
Wow.
Congratulations, brother.
Orlando. Go ahead.
So to sum it up, when we was in Hawaii, a lot of people, they might look at it negative, but Hawaii was the best experience if you wouldn't been part of the problem. I'm from the Bay Area, so I was down there with Northerners, Southerners, all the chaos that goes on there, but the resources was there. So, you know, I took advantage of it, even though I was locked up, going in the lockup cages, but I took advantage of that education, got a high school diploma, and also got a trade. So when I came home, I was productive in society to go to a junior college and then to take advantage of the job opportunities by me being on parole and getting bonded and getting around outreach programs that can help you. So the jail stuff is really not a negative experience. It's a positive experience because God built only those who can come out to share the testimony, but others don't have to fall through the cracks. Mm-hmm. So I applaud those who are going through it, But like I say again, it's always a positive solution. It's nothing negative. God don't make no mistake. Mm. So you come out and you help and heal others and show them that, look, it ain't worse where you at. People think why is bad. People think why is treacherous. It ain't that. Why got the most brilliant and beautiful people there and the best gifted minds, because they all throughout the state of California. Mm. So if you network and tap in with them, some of them is doctors, some of them is lawyers, some of them is gangbangers, but at the end of the day, we're only human, just trapped in a system, society, that's allowed to incarcerate us, not just people of color, but people of all races. It's just a system. It don't have nothing to do with black, white, Mexican. You go into jail, they got a quarter they feel, that's the thing, period.
Well, thank you for calling in, Orlando. We'll get responses in just a minute. We have one more phone call to take. Let's go to Michael in Oakland. Hi, Michael.
Hi. How are you? Listen, I wanted to say something that I think is so well illustrated by Monica, your guest there. I have worked for many years with The Beat Within. I think it's one of the
hey,
most...
Hey, Michael.
Hi, David. Hi, Monica.
Hey, old man.
One of the most inspiring programs, and the inspiration comes from the young people themselves. They, you know, I was doing a writing program with David in San Quentin, and one of the men said, I'm only here to learn, and that's what I feel like every time I go into a Beat workshop. I learn something. We lock up this incredible talent. The reason I wanted to focus on Monica is the irony of a system trying to try her as an adult when she clearly was not an adult. And if you knew her when I knew her early on, you saw this you know, this young person trying to become what she has clearly become. And I credit her very much for that, and The Beat for giving her the ability to have her own voice. And she's now very much in her own voice, speaking very much like an adult. And it's just so wonderful to hear that growth that The Beat helped provide, though, of course, Monica had it in her to begin with. But anyway, I just want to say that I cannot say enough of this program for what it does for the people who are writing, but more for those of us who are listening, reading, and hearing these people, because they have so much to offer, and we so easily cast them away behind walls as if they have nothing to offer. That's our loss.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for calling in, Michael. We have a related email from Jane who says, I'm so happy to hear these voices and hear their experiences. Thank heavens there are some adults who give a damn. Thank you so much, too, for something hopeful and positive when the politics are so abhorrent. Blessings to each and every one of you. Thank you for your willingness
Sweet.
To speak.
Thanks, Jane.
Janelle, sorry. Janelle. Thank you, Janelle. Can you again, David, just speak about the power of this? I think Michael makes a good point. When you hear about crimes being committed, and it happens frequently in the Bay Area, you go online and the comments are, you know, throw these kids away and throw away the key. That's what you see on a regular basis. And as Michael just said, in many cases, these kids are considered throwaways by society.
Right. Never seen it that way. I mean, I've always gone in with a very open mind to do this work. And as well as I see myself going in as a student, I want to learn from these young people why they made the choices they made, why they find themselves in the position they find themselves in today. And I want to give them that platform and the freedom and that safe place to share what they see as what's broken and what needs to be fixed, as well as what their plan is moving forward, even if it's a plan just for tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And I've learned so much over the years from these workshops that we lead, if it's in the juvenile hall, the county jail, or the state prison, where, as Michael stated, are brilliant minds. And they need to be, and we need to embrace these stories, and we need to learn from these stories, because these stories see what is broken in our communities, in the system, and overall in the world, and we can learn. And I think what Monica said earlier, it starts in the home. And anyway.
Jesus?
I'm glad they didn't throw away my key, because if not, I wouldn't be able to help as many of the young men that I've helped today. And just personally, from one-on-one conversations, they tell me, like, I'm glad you came across me. I'm glad I'm working with you now, because I helped them navigate through this system, helped them navigate through these attorneys and lawyers and judges and POs and the terminology and social workers and CPS and everything that is after our population. And it's not just them. It affects their moms and their parents. My mom had to go through different programs just to get me back when I was in the group home and ward of the state and all that. And I'm gonna be straightforward. I'm not going to go into details, but I've done horrible things, you know, and sometimes I still have to deal with that. But if you were to throw away the key then, I wouldn't be able to do anything that I do now. I wouldn't be able to write. I wouldn't be able to do El Dia Sin Inmigrante on May 1st. I wouldn't be able to help out with Carnaval. I wouldn't be able to help out my community. I work at Juvenile Hall, too, speaking to the youth there. So I've done so much. I'm tired of not just being angry and sad and hurt and just complaining. I go out and I take initiative and I fight, you know, and I know what's against me. I know people could throw any negative comment that they want at me, but regardless of what they say, I'm going to help out my people. I'm going to help out my youth, and we're going to move forward, and we're going to make mistakes, and I'm going to be okay with it, and we're going to support them no matter what. And that's just the resiliency and the power in us. Like, and that's why we choose to write. Like, that's one form of ventilation. There's different ways, you know, but for those who choose to write, it opens doors. And for the listeners, like he said, he's a learning, he's a student when he hears the youth speak. That's good, because maybe not everyone's been in these shoes, not everyone can relate, not everyone knows what it's like or feels the pain, but people who are at least open to learn or understand a little better, and not just be like, okay, I get it now, I heard. I spoke to a couple of kids in Juvenile Hall. Not, don't just assume that you know it all, but being able to learn and hear about it and want to help in whatever way that you can, I think that's big. Everyone's going to have to play their part. It's not a one-fixed thing. So, like I said, I'm just one person, and I'm going to keep opening doors and help people so that way there could be more of me, more of David's, more of Monica's in the community, and just keep pushing.
Beautiful.
Yeah. What do you want people to know about how the system works? Pacific Public News Service reports that there's a bill, SB 439, in California that would instead require that children 11 or younger be referred to Child Protective Services and be spared time in juvenile hall. And then a second bill, SB 190, would end the fees that families are charged when their children are held in juvenile hall or probation camps.
I'm not going to speak too much about the first one because I don't know too many of the details. But on the second one, we had to pay a lot of money for a lot of different things. And I don't think any parent wants their kids behind bars or in any other program besides their home, right. You know. So for them to pay, for them to be somewhere where they don't want them to be, that's not good. The system wants them to be in there. They want them to serve time. Then they should come up with the money to pay for all the things that they want the youth to do or require them to do in order to be free again. You know, and yeah, that's just, it's difficult. It doesn't just affect the youth. It's going to affect the parents. I put my mom through hell. Isabel Cova, I love you. Sorry for everything, but you know, I'll do everything to pay it forward, mama. Quiero mucho. Yeah.
David, I'm not sure if people realize that these fees can run up to $30 a day for juvenile hall and $17 a day for ankle monitoring.
Yeah. It's a lot of money in the end. And we're dealing with a lot of families that don't have that kind of money. And I think we can put that money into better use in the end. Again, into the community, into mentors, into the elders, into art program, into various projects.
Well, and that brings us to the larger question. What changes would you all like to see? I mean, what can we as a society do to ensure that kids who are as young as 11 or 12 are not going to jail?
I just feel like, I mean, supposedly they're working on restorative approaches, but I personally haven't seen nothing. Juvenile Hall will say that they reduced the number of juveniles in San Francisco, but at the same time, a lot of the juveniles have been gentrified and moved to Richmond and Oakland and other cities. So let's see what's really reducing the numbers. Is it the displacement in San Francisco, or is it really the restorative approaches that supposedly everyone is doing? And I'm not here to insult or mock anyone, but I'm just having straight talk. Like, you know, so regarding programs, I think we need more cultural competent staff who understands the culture, who's been there, who's done that. I mean, I'm not just saying because you're Mexican, you're going to work best for me because I'm Mexican. And you need to understand my neighborhood, my mission. You need to understand my experiences, my schools, and my family, what we, you know, our traditions, all that stuff. Because if you don't understand that, you're an outsider coming in. For example, if you're a police officer from Walnut Creek and you're coming into Hunters Point in San Francisco, you're probably going to be a little more intimidated, scared, or caught off guard by a group of three kids going to the corner store wearing all hoodies. You know, that's just one example. So we definitely need more people from the community who want to give back, who are on healthy paths themselves, and, you know, whether they want to be a case manager or they want to be teachers or they want to be lawyers or they want to be an after-school program coach, whatever position, that we need people who understand our community to work in the community.
Monica, what would you add?
We need more chance. We need more programs like the Be Within, and the Be Within needs more, you know, we need more people to come join us, yeah. because, you know, this work is, obviously, we're doing something here. We need more people like us, but we need more chances. Someone gave him a chance. He could really, you know, he's this great guy right here. He could help a lot of people, but, like, we need more people to believe in us. Mm-hmm. And, like, we're going to keep believing in ourselves and keep doing what we have to do, because we don't want to see more kids locked up.
Right.
We don't need to see more kids locked up. I mean, yeah, there's programs in juvenile hall, but, you know, we need more people that are going to help those kids out. That's what we need, that. We need solid people, people that we could trust and believe in.
We have an email from Ron who says, is there a place in this program or a similar program for someone with no prior experience with at-risk youth and from a different demographic group?
Ron should reach out to us via our website, thebeatwithin.org. Yeah. And someone took a chance on me with very little experience over 25 years ago or so. And so we're always giving everyone an opportunity, those that have heart and have a desire to touch lives.
And I just want to follow up with that. I've met different people from different organizations, and including the Be Within themselves, and we're not like 100%, not even 60% identical, but those people that I've met, they have good hearts, mm-hmm. they have good intentions, they don't try to act like something that they're not, and they come, you know, they come correct, and they're willing to learn, you know, from David and through people who are experienced doing the work, and they've never been locked up, not always, so they haven't, you know, been through the similar issues, but they work well with the mm-hmm. population inside Oakland jails and mm-hmm. San Francisco jails. So it's just come with a good heart, come from yeah. the right place, be willing to learn, and we got the right people to help guide you right. if that's truly what you want to do.
Yeah, treat them like any, like our young people, our elders, as human beings, and then they're going to respond to you.
Well, thank you for the email, Ron. You can find more information about the Beat Within and how to get in touch at yourcallradio.org. David, I also wanted to ask you what you think about this legislation, the SB 439, that would require children 11 or younger be referred to Child Protective Services and be spared time in juvenile hall, and then SB 190, which would end the fees that families are charged when their kids are held in juvenile hall.
Well, the first bill that you mentioned, I don't see too many 11, 12-year-olds or 10, 11-year-olds in juvenile hall. I mean, it's they're far and few. And I don't think they should, you know, again, I mean, I don't have a lot of knowledge on that, Rose, to really, like, do my spew on it. But I do not believe that anyone that young should find themselves within the juvenile justice system, if possible.
And then what about the bill that would end the fees for families?
Well, those are real. I mean, they add up. We see young people who find themselves fighting their cases 2 or 3 years because they're being tried as adults. And someone's paying for them to spend each day in there. And yes, it's the mothers. It's the grandmothers, whoever's parents who are the guardians of these young people.
What other changes would you all like to see to the system? Monica?
Oh, more schools getting built than jails.
Mm-hmm. Well, and now is a good time to speak out on that, because the California budget will be debated in the coming months. And there was a conference recently about this issue, and community activists said that this budget has so much more money in it for prisons in California, and they want that to come down to go to services that help people, especially people on the margins.
No, just a quick statistic. I know in 2014 they were spending like $9,300-something per student and $62,000 per inmate. So yep. Let's be straight. Each inmate, they're getting, let's get 20 cents an hour, 25 cents. That's $2 a day, $2 a day times 5 days a week. That's $10, $20 for, you know, 160 mm-hmm. hours. I mean, 80 hours of work, as opposed to paying someone $400, $500. And we wonder why we don't have jobs out here. The jobs are here. They're just in there. You know, it's a California license plate. Some of the lingerie from Victoria's Secret. Some people from mm-hmm. Kmart. Sometimes the people that you call the telemarketers, sometimes they're in jail and they're right. transferring your call. So, I mean, I feel like they're obviously investing in prisoners a lot more because it benefits yeah. them more. And for someone who has no experience or won't be highly affected or doesn't really bother them to make decisions about what's going to happen in my life, which is the reason why, like, I always take it to the streets. I take it to the programs. I take it to one-on-one conversations. I mean, mm-hmm. bills and laws will change and things will come and people are going to find support it. And I'm going to do my part. But Regardless of what people are doing up there, I'm going to play my role down here.
I've been wanting to do a show about this, David, about just what Jesus said, that the state of California spends about $9,000 per student and about $64,000per prisoner. And in Los Angeles, there's an article in the Sacramento Bee, in Los Angeles County, it's a yearly cost of about $247,000 per young person in prison.
That's a lot.
A lot of money. Yeah.
It says a lot about priorities.
Yeah, absolutely, and how the system is definitely taking advantage of.
Well, and since you've been working on this since 96, just quickly, what changes would you like to see?
Well, I think, as Jesus stated earlier, the numbers have dropped within the juvenile justice system, but that doesn't mean the crimes have dropped either. I mean, there's still a lot of young people who are scrambling around the streets without much programming and without a lot of support. And I'd like to see, again, as what was needed 20 plus years ago is needed today, more mentoring, more programs that embrace young people and encourage young people to see themselves beyond the easy stereotype that is placed on them in the communities they come from.
And just quickly, you're having a fundraiser on Friday night at the Great American Music Hall. The show starts at 8.
Yes.
Tell us about it.
Oh, wow. I'm thrilled. I mean, I pinched myself because, again, I never imagined to be with them would be doing this for 20 plus years, let alone that these artists are coming out from New Orleans and Chicago to perform, and Jesus and Monica will be up on stage sharing their words, and we'll be celebrating this amazing program, The Beat Within, and we've touched so many lives over the years, and we'll continue to do this until the wheels fall off, and it's just a way to celebrate all the amazing volunteers, facilitators, typists, editors, supporters, funders who have showed us love and to keep this tiny program afloat, and please come down this Friday at the Great American Music Hall.
And the show starts at 8 o'clock. You can find information at yourcallradio.org. David Inocencio co-founded The Beat Within back in 1996. Jesus Martinez wrote his first piece for The Beat when he was locked up as a 14-year-old. Today, he is working with young men in the juvenile justice system in Alameda County. And Monica Carlos was introduced to The Beat Within when she was incarcerated at age 15. Today, she continues to work with at-risk youth to make sure they don't make the mistakes she once did. David, Jesus, and Monica, thank you all for coming in, and thank you for sharing your stories.
Thank you, Rose.
Thank you. And you can find more information about The Beat Within. And also be sure to, if you're on Facebook, like their Facebook page because they post poems and stories on a regular basis. It's really amazing to read. Yeah, and you can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.